हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहैः ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे
Bottom of 30. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, "At this time, one of the thieves, acting as the chief priest, was ready to offer the blood of Jarabharat, whom they imagined to be an animal man, to the goddess Kali to drink as a liquor. He therefore took up a very fearsome sword, which was very sharp and consecrated by the mantras of Bhadra Kali, raised it to kill Jarabharat. All the rogues and things who had made arrangements for the worship of goddess Kali were low-minded and bound to the modes of passion and ignorance. They were overpowered by the desire to become very rich. Therefore, they had the audacity to disobey the injunctions of the Vedas, so much so that they were prepared to kill Jarabharat, a self-realized soul born in a Brahmin family. Due to their envy, these dacoits brought him before the goddess Kali for sacrifice. Such people are always addicted to envious activities, and therefore they dared to try to kill Jarabharat. Jarabharat was the best friend of all living entities. He was no one's enemy, and he was always absorbed in meditation on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He was born of a good Brahmana father, and killing him was forbidden, even though he might have been an enemy or an aggressive person. In any case, there was no reason to kill Jarabharat, and the goddess Kali could not bear this. She could immediately understand that these sinful dacoits were about to kill a great devotee of the Lord. Suddenly the deity's body burst asunder, and the goddess Kali personally emerged from it in a body burning with an intense and intolerable effulgence. Intolerant of the offenses committed, the infuriated goddess Kali flashed her eyes and displayed her fierce, curved teeth. Her reddish eyes glowed, and she displayed her fearsome features. She assumed a frightening body, as if she were prepared to destroy the entire creation. Leaping violently from the altar, she immediately decapitated all of the rogues and thieves with the very sword which they had intended to kill Jarabharat. She then began to drink the hot blood that flowed from the necks of the beheaded rogues and things and thieves as if this blood were liquor. Indeed, she drank this intoxicant with her associates, who were witches and female demons. Becoming intoxicated with this blood, they all began to sing very loudly and dance as though they prepared to annihilate the entire universe." It seems parties are always the same, right? At the same time, they began to play with the heads of the rogues and thieves, tossing them about as if they were balls, right? So even the Scottish can't get the, the credit for being the origin of soccer? Like that, because it's supposed to be they're the ones that started the game, like that, with heads, you know. But here we see it goes back a lot farther back. When an envious person commits an offense before a great personality, he is always punished in the way mentioned above. Sugadev Goswami then said to Maharaj Parikit, "Oh Vishnu Datta, Those who already know that the soul is separate from the body, who are liberated from the invincible knot in the heart, who are always engaged in the welfare activities for all living entities, and who never contemplate harming anyone, are always protected by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who carries his disc, Sudarshan Chakra, and acts at supreme time to kill the demons and protect his devotees. The devotees always take shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord. Therefore, at all times, even if threatened by decapitation, they remain unagitated. For them, this is not at all wonderful." 16 to 20, Srila Prabhupada concludes, These are some of the great qualities of a pure devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. First, a devotee is firmly convinced in his spiritual identity. He never identifies with the body. He is firmly convinced that the spirit soul is different from the body. Consequently, he fears nothing. Even though his life may be threatened, he is not at all afraid. He does not even treat an enemy like an enemy. Such are the qualifications of devotees. Devotees are always fully dependent upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the Lord is always eager to give them all protection in all circumstances. Right, so you see, they surrender to the Lord. The Lord takes care. He'll take care in his own way, but he takes care. So here it's... So it's definitely, you would have to admit the Lord took care here. Yes.
Goddess Kali, she's actually vegetarian because her husband, Lord Shiva, is vegetarian, so they say that this meat is taken by the ghosts.
Ghosts and that. When these people offer, it's all offered to the Ganas, yeah.
But here we see that they were drinking blood and everything.
She's Kali. So there's a problem? You know, because who are you offering to? We're not offering to Kali, we're offering to Shiva's wife. You know, in that mood. And so then that's all given to the Ganas. But here it's also, you have to understand the mood also. Right? You know, it's just like Bhima, like that. He's a devotee also, but he said he's going to drink the blood of Dushasa. So it happens, but it's more of an in-the-moment kind of thing. So. Because it's a great devotee and all this, and they're very sinful. So, you know, it sets, if a pastime goes down like this, it generally sets a precedent. Right? You know, people are not going to take this lightly. You know, if she just came in and said, you know, are you boys? Mind you, Mike? Like that, then it's going to be another thing. You know, if she just comes in and cuts off all their heads, and then all the she demons and that, they're there, and they're all tossing their heads around and having a great time. You know, so it definitely sets a mood that you don't mess with the Lord's devotee. Except, in a sense, yeah. Yes.
Aren't these forms of Bhadrakali and so on?
Yes.
Each of them is an expansion of a specific mood?
There's something specific. It's called Dasa Mahavidya. Okay. And then there's also sub ones of these. So there's the 10 main, and then they each have, some of them have these sub ones. So then there's so many of them, like that.
And Lord Shiva seemingly expands?
Yes, naturally, because otherwise how is she going?
Is that all the Rudras?
I'm not sure if that's the 11 Rudras or how it exactly works, but, you know, because this is all Shaiva Tantra, so don't know so much. But, you know, it's like, you know, you have Kala Bhairava, and I think then there's Bhadrakali, you know. So you know, there's a match there, at least for the 10. I'm not for the subsequent ones, I'm not sure. But it's a whole science, this song. Because it's just different moods for different occasions and all those like that.
Many of these forms of Kali are quite fierce.
Kali is fierce. Like that. But I mean, the Bengalis, because, you know, their mood and their, you know, respect for mother and all that, so they make her look really nice, but like that. But she's a bit more wild than they pictured. Like that. But it's all, you know, it's a wild scene. But this isn't the wild. Kali's not the wildest one. I think Chandi is the wildest one. Because here, she's wearing a skirt of arms and a necklace of heads. You know, so there's a little bit of, you know, covering up like that. But in Chandi, she's totally naked like that. Because the point is it's one thing, there's a naked lady there and it's inviting, so that's one mood. But it's another where there's a naked lady there and she's going to kill you. That's even more freaky, you know. Like that, so she doesn't wear anything, and she's so enthusiastic, you know, the mood. She's cut off her own head, right? And the blood squirting out of her neck her head that's in her hand is drinking it. That's 10. So I think Kali's, you know, I'm not sure where it is, but it's like 7 or something. So it gets wilder than this.
It really puts the material energy into perspective as not being a place of enjoyment.
Yeah. So it's like that. You know, she has her she-demons with her, and they're equally suitably dressed like that. Like all the she-demons here, whether they wear a garland of heads or not is another thing.
Smaller heads.
Smaller heads, but, you know, the point is it's wild.
Okay. Kumaraj, yes. So Kali, even if she prefer to protect the devotees and her own followers.
Yes, because she's Vaishnavi. She's a devotee. Means it's because her husband takes care of all these, because who's going to take care of all these people? So at least they should be part of following the Vedic standards, you know. But even here, they don't follow. So if they follow nicely, then she, you know, will deal into that. But they go out of it, but if it was just something else, then that's another thing. If they had brought the other guy that they originally had, it probably would have gone better. But because it was a pure devotee, then it's going to be a problem.
Yes.
Like that. Because she's a devotee. Mm.
But she's protecting her own followers, people who care, who take shelter of her.
Yes, but up to a point. If it's going to be at the expense of Vaishnavas, yes, then it's not going to work out so good. Mm. Yeah, like that. You know, it's like you're giving a chance to those who are unqualified, right? You know, but it's a limit to how much you can extend your hospitality. But you could say she did personally cut off all their heads. Okay, chapter 10. The discussion between Jarabharat and Maharaj Rahugana. In order to counteract illusion, one should surrender to a bona fide devotee. So that's the thing, is illusion comes up, but then it's by associating with the devotees, that's how it will be counteracted. So it's not by something else. So illusion means we can study the shastras, we can do all those things. What you see is that then always has the caveat that if it's not connected to the idea of pure devotion, then it's a waste of time. Right? Means it's better than not doing it. Means amongst material, then better you're doing that than not doing that. Right? But the actual thing, but it never says that about the pure devotees. Associating with the pure devotees, it never says, because even a moment's association is a value. So you don't get that there. Right? So then that's the essential point, because even you study the shastras, you won't know what they mean unless you have a bona fide devotee. Right? So, yes. Yeah, no, it's just it just won't develop so much. There'll be an appreciation, but the point is this should be dynamic, that you apply it. You know what I'm saying? So there's an appreciation for the Vedic literatures and that, but it should be that they actually apply it in their life. Because otherwise there's many who appreciate the Vedic literatures. You know, even Western academics and that, there's, you know, certain things, they like them. The Sanskrit, the grammar, the, you know, all these different things they find very, very nice. But the problem comes up is that they Okay. The particular of this chapter is expressed in this excerpt from Srila Prabhupada's purport to verse 20. In the association of such a sadhu as Jarabharat, Maharaj Rahugana came to the awareness that his activities as a royal authority were simply illusory phenomena. He therefore agreed to receive knowledge from Jarabharat, and that was the beginning of his perfection. So, and this is that they're going to have discussions, so then it comes to the point where he'll actually understand his position, right? And then the next chapter will actually be the instructions of Jarabharata. So this is going to be establishing the position between the spirit and matter and spirit. Chapter 10 summarizes questions and answers. In this chapter, several rhetorical and sarcastic questions are exchanged between Maharaj Rahugana and Jarabharata. Such types of questions normally do not come under the study, but since they provoke philosophical answers, the questions are listed. The answers, however, will be discussed in the Shloka Anusharanam section of the study guide, continuing into the next chapter. Because they'll start here, but it'll go, because the instructions go through to the next chapter. Question 5.4. This group of questions is asked by Maharaj Rahugana after being agitated by the rough pelican ride. Why are you carrying this palanquin unevenly? Aren't your fellow carriers cooperating with you? You rascal, what are you doing? Are you dead despite the life within your body? Do you not know that I am your master? So, relevant questions from his point. But you see, aren't your fellow carriers cooperating with you? One is that you're supposed to cooperate with them. It's a bit of a sarcastic, but at the same time, it's this idea that it all works together. So basically, he's not working together. That's the problem. So they're not cooperating with you. You know, you're doing something different, so they're not cooperating with you. You know, kind of. Question 5.5. These questions were asked by Jarabharata. In that case, who is the master and who is the servant? Nonetheless, if you think that you are the master and I am the servant, I shall accept this. Please order me. What can I do for you? What will you gain by punishing me? Then, question 5.6. Maharaj Rahugana's questions after understanding Jarabharata's position. Who are you? Are you a learned Brahmin and saintly person? Are you one of those exalted liberated saints such as Dattatreya and other highly advanced learned scholars? May I ask whose disciple you are? Where do you live? Why do you come to this place? Is your mission in coming here to do good for us? Please let me know who you are. Please tell me why you are wandering around like a drunk dullard. O great saintly person, you have spoken words approved by the yogic praxis. But it is not possible for us to understand what you have said. Therefore, kindly explain it. In other words, he gave him an answer, you know, to all the things that explain the spiritual subject matter, but because what he explained was so technical and advanced, he said, I don't understand, please explain it. So then we'll get his next discussions. I am therefore asking you, O spiritual master, what is the most secure shelter in this world? Is it not a fact that your good self is the direct representative of Kapiladeva, the incarnation of the Supreme Lord? Supreme Personality of Godhead. Are you not moving this way upon the surface of the world? How can I advance in spiritual life? Adhyaya Prakashika. The 10th chapter describes how Maharaj Rahugana, understanding that the foul words he used to describe the carrier of the palanquin were not suitable for a great sage, got down from the palanquin and praised Bharata. In this chapter, Bharat Maharaj, now Jarabharata, was successfully accepted by King Rahugana, ruler of the states known as Sindhu and Sourvirya. The king forced Jarabharata to carry his palanquin and chastised him because he did not carry it properly. A carrier of King Rahugana's palanquin was needed, and to fulfill this need, the chief carriers found Jarabharata as the most likely person to do the work, right? Because he was, fit and healthy and strong. Yes. And that's what's required. Jarabharata, however, did not protest this proud order, but humbly accepted the job and carried the palanquin. While carrying it, however, he was very careful to see that he did not step on an ant, and whenever he saw one, he would stop until the ant had passed. Because of this, he could not keep pace with the other carriers. The king within the palanquin became very disturbed and chastised Jarabharata with filthy language. But Jarabharata, being completely free from the bodily conception, did not protest. He proceeded carrying the palanquin. When he continued as before, the king threatened him with punishment. And being threatened by the king, Jarabharata began to talk. He protested against the filthy language used by the king, and the king chastised him. and the king, hearing the instructions of Jarabharat, was awakened to his real knowledge. When he came to his consciousness, he understood that he had offended a great, learned, and saintly person. At that time, he very humbly and respectfully prayed to Jarabharat. He now wanted to understand the deep meaning of the philosophical words used by Jarabharat, and with great sincerity, he begged his pardon. He admitted that if one offends the lotus feet of a pure devotee, he is certainly punished by the trident of Lord Shiva. Sloka Anusharana, summary of verses. Verses 1 to 8, Jarabharat is criticized by King Rahugana. 9 to 15, Jarabharat replies to the king and resumes carrying the palanquin. 16 to 20, prayers of the king to Jarabharat. 21 to 25, questions by the king. Yes?
What is the main reason that now he disclosed his position that he knows something?
Must been that there's some benefit that the person could get, because now he's preaching. Because, you know, before in the family, it's his family members, so, you know, they may take it seriously or not.
Could you see that there is a receptive person?
Maybe, could be.
He is going to, for self-realization, he's going to Kapilashram.
Oh, who? Jarabharat?
Yes. Rahugana.
Rahugana is going there.
That is why he's telling, representative of Kapiladeva.
Hey, yeah, those are that Ganga beads. I think they are, unless it was a wasp. But the Ganga beads are that big. You don't mess with them. So they look like that. They're really big, brown and red. And they're like that. You don't see them much. We get them here. I don't know. I've never seen them at the Ganga, but they call them Ganga beads. Okay, verses 1 to 8. Jarabharat is criticized by King Rahugana. King Rahugana forced Jarabharat to carry his palanquin and chastised him because he did not carry it properly. Sukadeva Goswami continued, "My dear king, after this, King Rahugana, ruler of the states known as Sindhu and Sauvira, was going to Kapilashrama. When the king's chief palanquin carriers reached the banks of the river Ikshumati, they needed another carrier. Therefore, they began searching for somebody." Oh, really? Kapilashrama. That means he's going down must be going down the Ganga. Right? Because the Ganga will go down to the Sagar. And so that would be the easiest thing to follow. Right? Unless he was just going straight across. But Sindhu means what would now be Pakistan. And Sauvira, I'm not sure. I think that's Gujarat and that kind of side, which is just next to it.
So Maharaj's Kapilashram is different from Ganga Sagar.
No, that I know of, that would be Kapilashram.
That's where Ganga
Because that's what the Sagar Mail about is going down worshipping Kapila Dev.
Okay.
You know, so it means it's a bit of a trek, so...
Yes.
They need somebody strong to. So then wherever they were, they must have come by where Jarabharat was. Because it didn't specifically mention where Jarabharat was from.
The river Ikshumati, you know?
No, I don't know.
I'll stay here.
Are you hearing? Yeah. Because sometimes they have those names and then they have other names. So, you know. So which one they're using, you don't know. You know, like Janavi. Then people may not know that's Ganga, you know, like that. Or Vishnupada, or, you know, like that kind of thing. And, okay, therefore they began searching for someone, and by chance they came upon Jarabharat. They considered the fact that Jarabharat was very young and strong, and had firm limbs, like cows and asses. He was quite fit to carry loads. Thinking in this way, although the great soul Jarabharat was unfit for such work, they nevertheless unhesitatingly forced him to carry the palanquin. The palanquin, however, was very erratically carried by Jarabharat due to his sense of nonviolence. As he stepped forward, he checked before him every 3 feet to see whether he was about to step on ants. Consequently, he could not keep pace with the other carriers. Due to this, the palanquin was shaking. And King Rahugana immediately asked the carriers, Why are you carrying this palanquin unevenly? Better carry it properly. Srila Prabhupada comments. Because the sage is supposed to see in front of them to make sure they don't step on anything. Right? So they don't look too far ahead, they don't look too close. They look far enough ahead where you can tell if something's there and you can not step on it. That's the distance. Srila Prabhupada comments. Those who are not Vaishnavas consider only human society worthy of their sympathy. But Krishna claims to be the supreme father of all life forms. Consequently, the Vaishnava takes care not to annihilate untimely or unnecessarily any life form. All living entities have to fulfill a certain duration for being encaged in a particular type of material body. They have to finish the duration allotted a particular body before being promoted or evolved to another body. Killing an animal or any other living being simply places an impediment in the way of his completing his term of imprisonment in a certain body. One should therefore not kill bodies for one's sense gratification, for this will implicate one in sinful activity. Right? It means they're in that body, they have to be, you know, they say 10 lifetimes as this particular animal. So partway through, if you kill them, then they have to come back and continue that lifetime. So that's why then that's the sinful aspect. Otherwise, technically, it's dead matter, so then what's the problem? Mm-hmm. But it's because they're there, the karma, they have to go through that, and if you don't, you give unnecessarily trouble. Yes. Right? To get through one lifetime, you would expect only to have one birth. Yes. Right? But if yes. But if then you're killed before that, then that's two births, or three births, you know, like that. Yes. So it's good, it would take a while. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So it just gives unnecessarily trouble to the living entities. Mm-hmm. So. Footnote 8. As Srila Prabhupada points out in his purport, being compassionate towards other living entities is a natural Vaishnava quality. Previously, Jarabhart confused this quality with sentimental attachment for a deer and was punished for it. Now, in his perfect state, Bharata keeps the quality of spiritual compassion while remaining free from material attachment. Right? So now this life, he's got it right. Because otherwise the complaint is, oh no, but he's being compassionate, what's the problem with that? There's no, but you are compassionate, but you can't get materially attached. Right? So here we see the compassion is there, but it lacks the material attachment. Yes. So then now he's functioning on his, you know, the natural platform for his position of realization. Right? Yes. Sukadeva Goswami continued. When the palanquin carriers heard the threatening words of Maharaj Rahugana, they became very afraid of his punishment and began to speak to him as follows. Footnote 9. Srila Prabhupada comments, according to political science, the king sometimes tries to pacify his subordinates, sometimes chastises them, sometimes derides them, and sometimes rewards them. In this way, the king rules his subordinates. Chatushtayam, the four diplomatic principles, Sama, the process of pacifying, Dana, the process of giving money and charity, Beta, the process of dividing, and Danda, the principle of punishment, Srimad Bhagavatam 7.5.19. This is very interesting. Further steps of that. Sometimes pacify, chastise, derides, and rewards. Is this how he's translated it? So it means the understanding of how this works, Prabhupada knows. Otherwise, how does he give so many synonyms?
Yes.
And these synonyms bring out so much more. This is really, really good. Okay, pacify, so that's the sama. Giving money, dana, so then what it said, sometimes rewards them. And then beta, the principle of dividing, and danda, punishment. So then chastising would be danda, and deriding them would be beta. Because when you deride, then that's how you can get, you show what could happen. If you don't do this, this will happen. And you also then break them off from the others, because it's very important that if you're seriously going to have to deal with, derision. Okay, see here. Yesterday is we don't use the fancy going into that, and then today we do. the derision of someone, then you have to make sure that that's not going to create a party spirit with others. So you have to divide them off from the others. So that means they have to be derided so that the others won't identify with them. You know what I'm saying? You see many times in the, especially in, you don't see it in the Vedic so much, but you see it non-Vedic, especially in the European, is that they'll chastise one person and then all the mass of people will take sympathy with that person. So then his chastising, but you have to always do chastising after Veda. You have to separate them from the other, dividing. You have to divide them. So it has to be that when he gets punished, all the people are thinking, yes, this guy deserved it.
Yes.
Then it actually means something. Otherwise, you're saying, we're setting an example, but what example is it? All you did was set an example of how you're the rat bag, not this guy who's making problem. And so now the people rise up against that authority. You understand? So that's unscientific politics. Right? Scientific is you want to make an example of the person by proper punishment and that, but then you have to separate him off from everybody else.
Yes.
Right? So that people think he's... Understand, it's not that it's political that he's not bad and you make him look bad. It's actually because the kings are doing, because there is something wrong according to Shastra. And then following Shastra, then they're bringing this out. Does that make sense? So you have to make sure that you're... Just like, let's say... The king wants to, his fortress is being attacked by, he was trying to work out something, and then it came out that somebody, I don't remember who it was, maybe his brother or something, then, you know, was pulling a thing that he would become the king and get rid of, you know, who is the king. And so then he made a pact with these different tribes around, so all these other kings, smaller kings. So individually they couldn't fight, but together then they could be something. So then they all came together to fight with him. And so then the problem is they didn't have enough facility and stuff like that. So then he used the other's not going to work. It's his brother, so that's not going to work there. You know, unless. You know, you can't trust him in that. So then they used Beta. So then he sent one of his men out with this big box full of jewels. You know, very expensive. And I forget basically how it went, but they moved in such a way that they're out of the way, but they would be noticed by the spies in that. You know, so because you're a spy, you know how to move where the spies look, so like that. But it's out of the way, so it's not that you're just walking and they'll think it's something else. So then they catch the guy and bring him, and then, you know, he had a letter that is from, you know, one of the kings, you know, for somebody else. In other words, it was an intrigue, right? That, okay, here's the money for, you're not going to support and go against that person and this and that. So it immediately, then whoever it was, the brother or whatever was the person, then he immediately, because it was those 12 against him, you know, their thing was, yes, we'll work together and all that, but once we take the city, then we'll get rid of him and then, you know, like this. So then he then had his men, because he was, you know, he was powerful, but not powerful enough. So then he killed all those kings, those 12 kings. Right? So now he's alone again.
Yes.
So now he can't actually fight against the brother. You understand? So that's Beta.
Okay.
You know, it's one form of using it. But you have to know where to use it. Use it the wrong time, because that's the thing, it's politics. Use it, timing is everything. Use it the wrong time, it won't work. You're like you're cooking, you put something the wrong time, it won't work. You know? Or it's something social. It has to be the right time.
Yes.
Right? So, yeah.
Maharaj,
yes.
A person in the position of leadership, he can use this for...
They have to use all these.
They have to
use. It's just that amongst the Vaishnavas, it'll be more gentle and all that.
Yes, yes.
But, you know, the thing is, this means you only have to use this Beta and Danda generally if things are out of hand. You know?
Yes.
In other words, it's like somebody's making some trouble, then if they don't, then you know, then they'll be, you know, they'll be removed from the community, or
yes,
they're not going to give them any
yes
facilities. So
yes,
if they want to do that, go ahead. You know, so there's dealing with them, which means what will be the consequence. And then there's the same time you're dealing with the others to make sure they're not going to support it.
Yes.
Right? So it has yes all these aspects. So it's four principles, but it's not that these principles aren't sophisticated.
Mm-hmm.
So all varieties of politics fit into these four.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like you send the ambassador to the other country. What's the first thing? That's Sama. Going to discuss and this
yes
and that. Or when they go, they may be taking some gifts and all that. And you know, so you use a combination.
Yes.
You know, and then as they're going and that, and you know, and so we would like this, and says no, but we're not interested. But then if you do that, then all these other countries, they are supportive of this, and then you know, we'll just go with them, you know, because you're the, you know, we consider you the more, you know, senior, you know,
yes,
and most, you know, important of the countries,
yes,
so we want to do this endeavor with you. But if you're not, then you know, this countries, they're all willing to do, and then we'll just have to go there. Right? So you've come in, you're speaking nicely, all those things, the Sama, then that doesn't work. You have the gifts, that's the Dana. Then now you use the Beta.
Yes.
You know? Does that make sense? And so then that's just how it goes. And then if they at that point, you know, whichever point they agree, that's where you stop.
Yes.
And if they don't agree there, then yes, okay, then you leave, and then you do the work with the other countries, and then they're left out. And so then, you know, then there's Danda. You know, so,
yes,
so, you know, mm-hmm, so it's just it's standard things, but it's sophisticated. It's not that it's gross, because a lot of times you think, oh, it's only four things, it's not much. No, those four things cover everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's just how you use Sama, how you use Dana, how you use that. That's
yes
a, is the point.
Yes.
You know? So that's the.
If you don't know how to use it, you can have problems.
You have problems. Yes. But I mean, everybody does it. Even the mom does it, you know, like that. You know, eat this, and then, you know, we can go and play, or, you know, something like that. It's always being used, you know. It's they're always using these things. You know, oh, you're so intelligent, you know, you should do like this. And, you know, the guy's 3 years old. You know, it's like, you know, it's like that, you know. Or if you don't do that, mommy's going to be very angry, you know. So, you know, it's just all these different things you're pointing out. They're all the standard things.
Mm-hmm.
So. But the point is if we explain all these political principles, you know, from the point of how the mother deals with her child, then, you know, heads of state might not take it so seriously, right? So you explain it from that side, and then it goes down. Right. Does that make sense?
Yes.
But if you really look at it, is that head of state is so good at it because his mother used those on him when he was a kid, right? You know, so.
Yes.
Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's the thing. So this, you know, you don't see all four of these generally being used, let's say, by the Norsemen. You know, they just kind of come in, burn and pillage and walk off with everything. So they don't, you know, they basically don't use any of them. you know, just the last one, maybe, Punisher, right, you know.
Maybe rarely some Beta, rarely.
Yeah, but yeah, generally it's not, you know. Maybe amongst themselves, but amongst everybody else they don't. The French are known for the politic because they're good at speaking, and, you know, speaking both ways, speaking nicely.
Yes.
So that you could say that they're the best at, you know, the Sama, speaking nicely, and the best at Danda. I mean, best at Beta, you know, splitting off and all that, you know, in a very nonchalant, offhand way, you know.
Yes.
You know, like that.
Dividing head controls.
Yeah, yeah. And also that, just in a practical way, you know. The guillotine.
But even without that.
Yeah, no, even without that. You know, that's just, that was more, that you could say the guillotine was more of the common people's thing. You know, it wasn't the, you know,
yes.
But that's the principle of that, is that that's just, they're the best at that. You know, that's why generally when at least it used to be, it was, you know, all these kind of things and things that were international done in French.
Yes.
You know, and they were always part of it. It was something really technical between countries that, that French came in and they work, would work it out. I don't know if it still is like that. I think everything's done over the internet now, so. but at least up to, you know, quite recent times, then they were the prominent. Yes.
Now, Maharaj, I am understanding quite more why the French devotee have many problems in France.
Yes, because they're using these things and not knowing about, you know, yes, like
yes.
That. Yeah. It's just that they're good at the, you know, because it goes together. Okay, now if we take all the positions, you know, generically, of all the positions, Brahma, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, who's most involved with women in the most grand way? The Kshatriyas. And along with it, which of the four Varnas, then the politic is part of their program, part of their service? Kshatriyas. Right? So in other words, women and politics go together.
Yes.
So the French are famous for their dealings with women, so that means they're famous for
yes.
politics.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? So it all has to go together. Nice dressing, nice speaking, nice food, nice, you know, all the different things like that.
It's a package.
It's a package, yeah. English can't cook, so they're not so famous in this way. Like that. Yes.
In devotee's circle, like because everyone knows part of these four things. So when even the management applies these rules, like the person who is going through, they identify because there is some Veda or something. And immediately because people doesn't have the complete knowledge, everyone gets affected. Why the authorities are doing like this?
Yes, because the thing is that there actually has to be the Krishna conscious point of it. You know what I'm saying? Because being good at the skill is not enough. Because politic means it worked. It doesn't necessarily mean that everybody is really happy. You know what I'm saying? But in the Vedic, because it's about protecting the people, so he's taking care all the time. So if something goes wrong, then when the politic is applied, then no one minds, because the standard is that taking care. Does that make sense?
Yes.
You know, so if a politic only comes out when there's a problem, then who's going to trust such authorities? Right? You know, so politic is just part of just the interaction. You're trying to get something done, they're trying to get something done, so you find a way to get it done. But the point is in the Vedic, it's based on Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra.
Yes.
Right? You know, which is given, you know, direction by the Brahmins. So then it will work a lot better. Right? You know, we can say, no, but we're not into politics, diplomacy is kind of like, give me a break.
Because, again, coming from this material education, all these things, and having half knowledge of scriptures, seeing everything into blocks, means devotee should be like this only.
Yes, but the point is, but then the whole point is they're saying devotees have to be like this. Mm-hmm. Who said devotees are just like that?
Mm-hmm.
That's their idea. So how well does your own idea go down? So in other words, a mundane idea will always create problem, no matter how nice it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Because you're nice to one person means at the expense of someone else. See, the Vedic mentality is there's enough for everybody. The modern mentality is there's a limited amount. Otherwise, what's its value? You know what I'm saying? The Vedic system, gold is valuable whether there's a small amount of it or tons of it. Right? If everybody's walking around in gold, it's still just as valuable. It may be easier to get, but its point is this. You know what I'm saying? But in the modern system, it's valuable because there's less of it. It's harder to get. You know, just like diamonds. There's tons of diamonds, but because one company controls all the diamonds, then they put them out just as they like to keep the prices very, very high. You understand? Otherwise, diamond is just, you know, a piece of rock that sat underground a little too long and got, you know, hard. You know what I'm saying?
It's carbon.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? It's not, it's not that fancy. You know, it's just this one company made it fancy. But I think before, what, 50 or 40s, diamonds weren't prominent. You know, this thing about an engagement ring, maybe 30s or something, but some point that an engagement ring is a diamond. But, you know, previously no one uses that.
The Krishna Devaraya, they used to sell on the marketplace.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just, you know, one of the things you need. You know, you mean astrological, you need them, you use it for medicine, they look nice, you know, like that. So they weren't that much of an uncommon thing. You know, because you get them anywhere. I mean, there's beaches in the southern part of Africa.
Yes.
That are guarded, you know, how do you call it? Barbed wire and machine guns and everything. Because just on the beach, there's just sitting diamonds.
Yes.
Like that. That's what he's saying. There's tons of them. It's just that they only, you know, bring so much in. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Maharaj, you were saying how the Vedic system gives happiness for everyone. It reminded me of a class where Srila Prabhupada said the Vedic system is, I think it's said, sarva sukham bhavantu,
yes.
Make everyone happy.
Yes.
Yeah, you kind of, like you see Govardhan Puja, your Giriraj is not happy unless you fed all the dogs and other, you know, whoever can be, whoever would appreciate, you know, rice and stuff like that. You know, so you're going to feed the cows, you're going to feed the dogs, you're going to, you know, the birds like it, like that. You know, I wouldn't go chasing the gecko around, you know, like that. But, okay, so it's just a different approach. Therefore, it's always at the expense of someone else.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That's the problem. It's like, you know, it's either the landlords, you know, they have the power, and then the common person and they're suffering, or, you know, the common person has the advantage and then the landlord suffers. It's never that you can make them both happy. I'm sure they could probably work at making both of them unhappy, but generally, you know, that's a possibility. Now that's, you know, so 3 out of 4, right? 3 out of 4. Yes. Yes, only it is Krishna consciousness. Because if Krishna consciousness, then everything comes into its place.
Yes.
Because if you use these things according to the modern, you know, I mean modern things, or just on its mundane thing, without Krishna consciousness, it'll be an annoyance. Even if it's correct, it'll be an annoyance.
Yes.
That's why when we use these things, it has to carry the Vedic flavor, which has a balance, you know, because of the laws of nature. But it has to have the devotional flavor. Otherwise, it's not pleasant for the devotees. So it's minimum on the Brahminical standard. But ideally, it'll be on the Vaishnav standard. You know, that's how we would deal. Because if you try to use it on any other level, it won't work with devotees.
Yes.
It just won't work. Especially if they go down and get it out of a self-help book. It really, there's a fragrance there. Just, I don't know how they don't see it. You know, I guess if you stay in the bathroom too long, you don't notice the smell or something. You know, so, you know, that kind of thing.
Sometimes it's difficult to determine all the intricacies of dharma, but Krishna conscious perspective is always more easy to...
Yes, because if you're always trying to maintain what works for Krishna, then you would be looking at what are the acharyas recommend, what is the shastra. So if you start from there, it makes it easier.
Yes.
And then you expand out how far you can. See, that's the advantage is that because something comes at the end, right? Results are at the end, right? So in the what is it? I guess aloha, you know, the going up, you know, the ascending process.
Yes.
So in that, then you start with the foundational and then you have to move up from there. And so you have to move up until you reach the actual goal.
Yes.
And until you get there, you don't have anything.
Yes.
right?
Yes.
Yeah, and if you get like yes. this. But in the Vedic perspective, or the devotional perspective, you're starting with the goal. Yes. And then you're working yes. down to the person that you're dealing with, how sophisticated they are in the need of the application. So you already have the goal, you already have the Krishna consciousness, then you're just adding the environment around it. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like I have a nice meal, and so for somebody, you just stick it in the bowl and they're good. You know, someone else, then you know, you set up the table a little bit, someone else, then it's, you know, really fancy, like at a hotel or a banquet, you know, like this, but the point is the meal's already there.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? You know, so that's the point. Is that
we can see the meal, we can get inspired.
Yes, yes, and then it will.
Yes.
Okay. So in other words, the king is this is how he deals. Otherwise, then they won't do their duties properly. O Lord, please note that we are not at all negligent in discharging our duties. We have been faithfully carrying this palanquin according to your desire. But this man, who has been recently engaged to work with us, cannot walk very swiftly. Therefore, we are not able to carry the palanquin with him. Srila Prabhupada 3-4, Srila Prabhupada comments. The other palanquin carriers were Shudras, whereas Jarabhart was not only a high caste Brahmin, but also a great devotee. Shudras do not sympathize with other living beings, but a Vaishnava cannot act like a Shudra, right? So immediately they just go, it's not us, it's him. You know? But they're the ones that got him, yes. So you're responsible. If it's not working right, you're at fault. You brought the guy.
Yes.
Right? But a Vaishnava cannot act like a Shudra. Whenever a Shudra and a Brahmana Vaishnava are combined, there will certainly be imbalance in the execution of duties. The Shudras were walking with the palanquin without at all caring for the ants on the ground. But Jarabharat could not act like a Shudra, and therefore difficulty arose. Now, if they were all worried about the ants, they would all stop. And then when the ants went by, they would all go.
Yes.
Like that. So then there'd be no problem. He might ask why you're stopping and starting, because of the ants. Yeah, so there'll always be an imbalance in the execution of duties. So that's why you can't use Shudra techniques in Brahminical society. Right? You know, it means it's not that they're not part of the Brahminical system, but they have the hierarchy. So the Brahminical standard is by which you judge the application of the Shudra occupation. So the Shudra occupation, its standards then are used to adjust the Brahminical position, then it's not going to work out.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Yeah. And especially here in the community of Vaishnavas, then it's about Krishna's pleasure.
Yes.
Right? But we have to remember is the Brahminical culture is Krishna's pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
Right? In other words, the devotion is the main thing, but the expression through the Brahminical culture is Krishna's preference. You don't have availability of the Brahminical standards. You're using whatever you can. As long as the devotion is there, Krishna's happy. But, does that make sense? But if you think that, no, it doesn't matter, so I'll use the Shudra standards, and because I'm doing devotion, then Krishna will be, you know, happy with that. You know, does that make sense? But it's not that, it's how you say, it's not that that's all that you have. You could do the Brahminical standard, but you don't relate to it. You don't feel like it. So therefore, you prefer the Shudra standard.
Yes.
So the point is then it's not about Krishna, it's about ourselves. So how much devotion is actually there?
Yes.
That's the question that comes up. You know, that'll be just like, you know, something
else. Yes.
That's the point. Like Prabhupada's talking about in the temple. You have where the boga is and you have where the prasad is. You don't mix the two.
Yes.
And if you can't follow that, then actually how much love do you have for Krishna? Because this is how Krishna prefers it. We can say, oh, it's not practical. We do everything together. But that's practical for you. It's not for Krishna. Krishna prefers to separate. So then, actually, where is the love? So when we say, oh, we're Westerners, we can't do all these things, then the question is, who's the love actually for?
Yes.
You know? That's the principle. Does that make sense?
So Maharaj, if in ISKCON we don't install Vanashandharma, we're going to be...
It's going to be in imbalance.
Like that.
Yes. So that's the whole point. Devotees are talking community, but the very thing that makes community, it's just like everybody wants to eat and all that. Okay, so let's cook. No, no, we're not into cooking. We're Vaishnavas. We don't care for the rules and all that. We don't do it. We just chant Hare Krishna.
Yes. Yes. Stupid.
Yeah, it's stupid. That's all. Because everything everybody wants, Varnashram provides.
Yes.
You know, they want family interaction. That's what it's about. They want occupations and money and facility. That's what it's about.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? So these are the things that when people talk community, that's what they are. Self-sufficiency. Does that come from just because modern people talk about it? They weren't self-sufficient before. Nanda Maharaj, in his growing of his, you know, fruits and vegetables and the was it organic or inorganic?
Organic.
Yeah, of course. You know, were his cows free range? Right? You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing. You know, is it grown seasonally? Things like that. So everything that now the modern... But the point is if we come... Because it's devotional, oh, that's archaic. But if suddenly it becomes a fad in the modern society, oh, no, this is what we want. We have to do this. You know what I'm saying? So that's the funny part. So then we take lead from the modern society, but then also take the lead is that, you know, how does it work economically? You know? How does it work, you know, in family life? How does it... Because there's no standard in family. You know, what's the standard? How does a parent take care of the child? You know? Like that. When do they conceive the child? Day, night, inside, outside?
Anything.
It means that anything goes. You know, it's like, you know, as long as somebody gets pregnant, you're good. You know, and ideally it's the wife, right? Like that. You know, so there's no, like that. What's the diet when a girl's pregnant?
No diet.
No diet. In fact, the crazier it gets, then hey, it happens.
Yes.
You know, it has an effect. I know one devotee. You know, most people when they eat apples, they don't eat the center core.
Yes.
You know, but I know a devotee, he eats everything except for the little stem, seeds, everything.
Okay.
And I was asking about it one day. He's like, eat that? Why like that? And then he was saying is that when his mom was pregnant with him, she would eat like two kilos of apples a day, or maybe a kilo of apple a day. You know, just eat a lot of apples every day. So basically, he's made of apples. So, you know, so he really likes apples, right? You know, like that. So there's no standard like that. And okay, what about and the child is there? How do you train them? When do you start training them? What do you train them in? You know, how do you chastise them? Do you not? You know, do you use all these four here? What, you know, what's the thing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, oh, you know, we're only supposed to use sama, you know, no danda. But the point is sama works because you know there's danda, right? You don't have to use the danda. That's what Veda is about. In case they forget, then you can point it out. Yeah, so... The thing, you know, what's the standards? Where do they go to school? What kind of food do they eat? How do they dress? What is the social interaction? You know what I'm saying? So because there isn't anything, that means everybody in the community has a different value system. How do you have community? Because whenever I hear devotees talk about community, oh, that's a model for community. They won't use the Vedic one. But they, you know, I don't know if they still do, but they always used to bring up the Amish. Amish, you always bring up the Amish. And sometimes they bring up Pondicherry.
Yes, yes.
Did I leave anybody out? The Mormons also, okay. Now, let us just look at it. The Amish. Now, okay, they have a community. Right? As a general thing, I don't know if it's now, but they don't use cars. They go around on horses and buggies. Like that. The women dress and the men dress like something out of the 1800s. German. you know, not French, not Italian, German, right? Like that. And they're farmers, right? You know, the boys and girls aren't messing around with each other. You know, they get married, I think, at a certain age. You know, when they're 18 or something, then they get married. Like that. They have tons of kids. Like that, you know. Something says, you know, so that they all have the same values. They eat the same food, same clothes, same everything. And so they have community. You know? And, you know, is it the house they live in that makes the community? You know what I'm saying? So that all the things that we rebel against, the same clothes, same food, same language, same, you know, way we deal with our children, that's the problem. Mormons also, they're very strict on things. You know, they just stay amongst themselves. And the fun part is that the biggest, within ISKCON, the biggest holy festival is done with Mormons. You know, I think 100,000 show up for the holy. Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Like that, you know. And they're all from Utah, so there's a good chance most of them are Mormons. You know, unless they're coming from local or around, because it's such a big festival. But the point is it's happening there. So that's the thing, is that it's there. We follow it, it works. We don't follow it, it doesn't work. It's simple. You have a recipe, you follow it, you get the preparation. You don't follow it, you do whatever you like. God only knows what you show up, end up with. You know? You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I take the coriander leaves, I leave them whole, and I put them in the pot, boil them very nicely, and then at the end take some potatoes, cut them up really fine, and then garnish the top. The recipe called for potatoes and coriander. You know, what's the problem? Right?
Yeah.
You understand? So that's the thing, is you adjust anything, it's something different. Like that. Like you're cooking, let's say you're cooking milk, right? You want to cook it down into burfi or something, or kheer. You put the sugar in the beginning, the kheer will come out brown. You put the sugar at the end, it'll be white. Right? But because you've cooked it so much, it'll also get a certain thickness and texture that it won't get if you put it at the end. You know, you stir the milk constantly, you'll get a smooth kheer with no lump. You just stir it occasionally, you'll get the lumpy kind. Right? Depends on what you want. But you can't say, well, you know, we're not, you know, jata mat tato patwalas. You know, whatever path, you know, that way it all ends up at the Supreme. That's for Mayavadis. So that's the difficulty. Is the very thing that could answer all the difficulties we have is the very thing that is the first thing to not go on the list. You know.
Yes. Marshall Prabhupada said that this movement cannot be affected from the outside, but only
from the inside. Yes.
Is this lack of common values the seed of all these problems that may come up?
You could say. I would say, though, it's secondary. The main thing will be if the primary of pure devotional service is the common. With time, the others will come anyway. But if there's some discrepancy there, then you'll have a problem. Because even if you have the common social system, but you may end up with different philosophies, hence Hindus, right? One culture, and then a plethora of philosophies. So the idea is that pure devotional service is the one philosophy, and then you apply that into the Varanasi, then you'll have something solid. It's not that karma makes bhakti. Bhakti is what makes the karma work. So you also have to know which order to that also. So it's refined. If we want something refined, then you have to know as it has effect, like that. So we have all the tools here. Because we see, we get down into fine points. We can get down to just the words Prabhupada uses indicate things. But we have to take that, and then discussing that, then you take that over discussions and practice over years, then we would be very expert.
Yes.
Like that. You know. Rather than being expert at rejecting Varnasha. Not quite good at that. You know, that. Okay. Okay, on the top, right?
Sukadev Goswami continued, King Rahugana could understand the speeches given by the carriers, who were afraid of being punished. He could also understand that simply due to the fault of one person, the palanquin was not being carried properly. Knowing this perfectly well and hearing their appeal, he became a little angry. Although he was very advanced in political science and was very experienced, his anger arose due to his inborn nature as a king. Right? Because technically he didn't need to get angry. Because he is the king and he can punish them. So he just has to speak very nicely and all that. But because he's a king, that passion, sometimes that comes up. That's what the need of the in the administration, that you have the Brahminical element. Yes. Just in case that comes up, it can be balanced.
Yes. Yes.
Right? It's not that that they're wrong. It's just that the expression doesn't need to be that strong.
Yes.
Is that a situation where the passion is degrading to ignorance?
Then it'll cause that. That's the difficulty. Mm-hmm. You know, so in other words, the anger will always create something that you wish hadn't. Because it's one thing is if everybody was like Jarabharat, then you wouldn't have any problems. So you could be angry and everybody be cool. But if everyone is on the platform of Jarabharat, no one would be getting angry anyway. So, so that's the thing. Because of material consciousness, people become affected by that. So then... Actually, King Rahugana's mind was covered by the mode of passion, and he therefore spoke as follows to Jarabharat, right? Because passion is he wanted to enjoy. He wanted to have a smooth, comfortable ride. You know?
Better to walk himself.
Yeah, that's also there. With this crew, probably better to walk. Yeah. And therefore he spoke as follows to Jarabharat, whose Brahman effulgence was not clearly visible. You know, he doesn't say how long it was since the last program because he wasn't taking a bath. So before, because if he's dirty and unkempt, you couldn't see that effulgence.
Yes.
Right? Because if he's clean and nice, you tend to see it. But we saw, even though he was there, Kali could see it, but the dacoits couldn't. Right? So therefore, they couldn't tell that he wasn't a man-animal. Right, because then he'd be very dull. Why would you know? But he was very bright and effulgent. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, it's interesting. It's referred to as his Brahman effulgence. I mean, we don't hear that said very often about a devotee's effulgence being Brahman effulgence.
Well, Brahman effulgence meaning he's a Brahman, so he's situated in Brahman. So the effulgence of a Brahmana, you could say, is a Brahman effulgence, like that. You know, or the you know the effulgence that comes from understanding you're not the body or the soul. But so they could catch that. Now the devotional side, that's not necessarily can catch. So they can perceive that this person's advanced and there's something special if they're a little bit trained. So that much they can catch. So they won't be able to understand the devotional. So they don't understand this is, you could say, Bhagawan effulgence, not Brahman effulgence. But that's the minimum. Right? Yeah. Jarabharat, whose Brahman effulgence was not clearly visible, being covered like a fire covered by ashes. Right? So the fire is there, but you can't see it because of the ashes. Verse 5. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out that although King Rahugana had received knowledge from sages and was therefore influenced by goodness, due to his Kshatriya nature, he became agitated by the response of his palanquin carriers, and the mode of passion took over. So even though he's there and his whole intent on going on the palanquin is for activities of a higher, elevating nature, but because of the Kshatriya nature, then when something comes up, then they can get angry more easily. Does that make sense? Yeah. Srila Prabhupada comments, the distinction between Rajagun and Sattvagun is explained in this verse. Although the king was very upright and advanced in political science and governmental management, he was nonetheless in the mode of passion, and therefore, due to a slight agitation, he became angry. Jarabharat, despite all kinds of injustice endured because of his deaf and dumb display, remained silent by the strength of his spiritual advancement. So this is the difference, you can see. He's won by his spiritual advancement. He's keeping quiet, though, you know, it's actually, he doesn't deserve this. And the king is just bad arrangements, and so then he's getting upset.
Yes.
Right. So.
King Rahugana told Jarabharata, "How troublesome this is, my dear brother. You certainly appear very fatigued because you have carried this palanquin alone." Right? You see, you can see it. So he's using, you know, sama, but with some sarcasm there, right? So it's indicating other elements. Okay, you've carried this palanquin alone without assistance for a long time and for a long distance. Besides that, due to your old age, you have become greatly troubled, right? Because he's a young man, he's very fit, very strong, he's with other people, so, you know, it's just one way of doing it. Sarcasm. So that means it's gone beyond. Otherwise, you talk nicely first.
Yes.
Right? Pleasant. And then you try to, you know, give a little bit more energy. Then you get sarcastic.
Yes.
Right? Does that make sense? So, you know, there's a progression. So that he's come to sarcasm means there's that touch, that anger is there, but he's still holding it. Right?
Yes.
My dear friend, I see that you are not very firm, nor very strong and stout. Right? So he's taking everything that's there and reversing everything. Right? Aren't your fellow carriers cooperating with you? In this way, the king criticized Jarabharata with sarcastic words. Yet, despite being criticized in this way, Jarabharata had no bodily conception of the situation. He knew that he was not the body, for he had attained his spiritual identity. He was neither fat, lean nor thin, nor had he anything to do with a lump of matter, a combination of the five gross and three subtle elements. He had nothing to do with the material body and its two hands and legs. In other words, he had completely realized his spiritual identity, aham brahmasmi, so therefore the Brahman effulgence. He was therefore unaffected by this sarcastic criticism from the king, because it had nothing to do with him.
Yes.
Right? Without saying anything, he continued carrying the palanquin as before. Verse 6, Srila Prabhupada comments. Due to his being freed from the bodily conception, the sarcastic words of the king did not at all affect him. The body is created according to one's karma, and material nature supplies the ingredients for the development of a certain type of body. The soul the body covers is different from the bodily construction. Therefore, anything favorable or mischievous done to the body does not affect the spirit's soul. The Vedic injunction is asango hyayam purusha. The spirit soul is always unaffected by material arrangements. So that's the point, is the soul isn't affected, because the body is just created by your previous actions.
Mm-hmm.
So his previous actions were such that he would have a body, but because he was absorbed in the Lord and all that, then he was put into this very high grade Brahmin family, right? And then he could continue his devotional service there. Does that make sense? So, but the thing is it's still not him. He's the soul. He's not the body. So,
he has fully realized.
Yes, he's fully realized. That's the thing. He's a humble master, so he's fully liberated. So it's not that he's, you know, greatly knowledgeable or, you know, has some good realization, but he's fully realized in this life. So on that spiritual platform, he's fully realized. Now his devotion to the Lord, that's always something more that can develop. That unlimitedly goes on. But it's not that, Mother Jashoda, how Brahman realized she is today is more tomorrow. Once you come to the liberated platform, it's the same thing, because it's unchanging, so it won't change. It's the same platform. It's the devotion that unlimitedly increases.
Yes.
Right? Does that make sense? So the Brahman platform compared to the material seems unlimitedly greater.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But it's static. It stays the same. But the devotional then is unlimitedly greater than that, and it keeps getting better and better.
Yes.
So it's a whole different category.
Yes.
So.
For us, we see through the eyes of Shastra all these points about not being the body.
Yes.
Someone like Jarabharata, he directly experiences the
body. Yeah, he just, no, it's not, he's not the body, so it's not there. It's just, so he acts, but it's not that being not the body that you don't care about it. You know, so you take care of what you have, because it's for Krishna. I'm not this puja paraphernalia, so I can just toss it around and it breaks, and you know, I'm self-realized. No, that's the whole thing. So they take care nicely. Okay.
Mm.
Okay, so we'll stop here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Oh Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.